This is RJ City, and you are listening to Let the Hate Flow Through You with Jeremy Shear and El Yordano Diablo.
Let the hate flow!
Available on the Lousy Weather Media Network.
Welcome to Let the Hate Flow Through You, your weekly dose of audible hatred. I'm Jeremy Shear.
El Yordano Diablo.
And this week, we are joined by a comedian, producer, and just this past week, number three roast battle in the world. It's Justin Palko.
Yes, that's me, number three.
Welcome. Well, hey, I mean, that's, you know, people, you know, the whole if you're not first, you're last, fuck that. Like, I if you come in top 10,
yeah,
depends on how many out of how many people. If you come in top 10, you're doing all
three
right.
3 out of 16, I would say, is good.
That, yeah, absolutely.
And it's my first time getting on after several submissions, so I'm just grateful to be here, you know.
Look at this guy. It's all humble and shit. Yeah. I like that.
But also, it should have been one. But
I mean, yes.
A man spoken after my own true heart. I love that.
Yeah. I was at that battle. It was very fucking good. It was Justin's best performance I've ever seen. And
first of many this year.
Yeah, it's going to be a big year for Cleveland. But enough about the other project that is everywhere here. Justin, why do you hate 12-step programs?
I'll give you the long, but the short of it is they're very exclusionary. Mm. It's our way or the highway.
Agreed.
And after being in there for a long time and trying other things, it's very gray. Addiction and drug use, it's all very gray, and what recovery means is they try and define it as this one specific thing, is you don't do any drugs ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even some of the extremists who don't take Tylenol,
yeah,
even, or think that like all mental health stuff is using, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I found that is very exclusionary, and I was like, this can't be the only thing that works, you know. But I did it. I did NA, a 12-step program, for like 2 years. I was clean, and I had service positions. I did all that stuff, breaking anonymity here, but you know, and then as soon as I got high, people just like, who are my friends for years, just weren't my friends anymore.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing, is like the exclusionary shit that you're talking about, is unless you play by their fucking rules. Mm-hmm. And like the moment, because I did 4 months in rehab last year. I was at Stella. Mm-hmm. And like it was good for me. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But like I was never going to buy into all that. It's just not who I am. And you know, it's AA and NA, like NA tries to like pretend
be
that
cool
they're not fucking
it, yeah.
AA, but it's the fucking same exact thing, except they get a workbook.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's almost for like the remedial kids.
It is. That's how it feels. That's how it feels. I was never in there with the top brass.
I will say this. I'll just say this at the get-go. The one program that I was like, okay, I could maybe do this, was the recovery dharma.
Is that like the smart recovery?
No, they're all similar. This one, it's Buddhist. It's an eightfold. Oh, it's like okay. They do an eightfold path, and the book's real short, and it's very just cut and dry. Like, yo, like, and it still has you go through like the making amends and all that shit or whatever. But I like the way that they attacked it. Way, it's probably not the best word to use, but I like the way that they did it. But the guy who, because you know, when I got in there, I tried to be, you know, I'm never doing this again. Because when you on the flip side of it, when you get out of detox and you feel okay for the first time in a long time, and you're, you know, like I went straight into like the housing and shit, and like on campus or whatever, and you but the guy, so I went, I was not, because they push AA shit so much. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Is like
in the treatment centers.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like you have to do this,
and like they can't say that they're affiliated with AA, but it's basically an affiliation. It's
because,
like,
there's no alternative,
right? And yeah. They don't. They won't. They have recovery dharma fucking meetings there. That's where I found it, you know. But, like, it's not that they discourage, you know, smart recovery or this or that. But they want you to fucking do AA, mm-hmm. like, and it just, I don't. It's all very manipulative. I'll say that.
It's sort of like a pipeline: the rehab to the AA to working at the rehab. Mm-hmm. Like, I went the first time in 2018, and then I went back a couple of years later, and a couple of the people I was in there with as patients had worked there now.
Yeah,
and I was like, how? Why? I guess they feel a calling to it or something, and more power to them. But
I think it helps keep some people accountable.
Yeah, for sure. And I think what I took away from the 12 steps is you get in what you put into it.
Yeah.
And that's what they say there, and it's unfortunately one of the true ones. But yeah. If you try really hard and you do their steps, you will stay. You won't use drugs. You probably won't use drugs, but is that what you want? Like, is that, that's not what I wanted.
Sure.
I thought it was at first. Like, I was like, I just don't want to do drugs and I don't want to mess up my life.
Well, I mean, one thing, like, I'll say another thing that I don't want to say bought into, because I don't, like, there's a reason I don't go around saying, oh, I'm sober. I smoke fucking weed, dude.
Yeah,
like, I don't give a fuck what anybody else thinks about it. Like, nobody is going to define my sobriety. And that's why I don't even use that fucking word, because I don't like to be somebody that I don't practice what I preach. Yeah. And that's, like, you know, just because I'm good at talking, I guess. People told me, oh, you should be a counselor. And it's like, I could, I guess, but I'm not gonna go in and fucking lie to people.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I do. What works for me now and what's worked for a while is I had to, like, tear it down of what I didn't like about AA or what I hated. Since that's a podcast, what I hated. And it's they tear you down. They make you say, I can't do this. Right. I'm powerless. I need God. And I just found that really belittling for me. Like, I was like, but what if I think about it the other way? Because you have all these people, you have rehab telling you, you can't do it. So, like, a kid that you hit who did nothing wrong, they think they're the, like, that's how it is, because that's all they're hearing. So I was like, what if I do the opposite of what everyone says? What if I try and believe that I can stop if I want to? And I did.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people can do it. I don't like telling people to try it or anything, because, you know, the wrong person might hear it and die.
Yeah.
You know, but I just, my life is good now.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, they tell you in there, oh, you can't compare yourself to other people. Mm-hmm. Your recovery to other people.
Yeah.
While they simultaneously are low-key comparing you to everybody else.
Yeah,
and it's,
they,
like,
want the most time. They're like, hang out with the people that have the most time.
Right. And don't even get me I mean, I guess we could get into that now, but, like, the fucking, one of the things that turned me away from it, and it's not even the guy that, you know, because Shear was my sponsor while I was in there. I needed somebody on paper, and he fucking, and
they asked me, well, are you willing to die for him? When I went to sign the paperwork, and I was like, man, I'm ready to die, like, right now.
You got any heroin?
Like, shut up.
But, like, so, like, the other guy I was talking to that was, like, you know, that I was, when I was actually considering going through the AA book and stuff, like, this guy, he wasn't super preachy. He was an older punk rocker. I liked the guy a lot. You know, we had mutual friends and everything, but it's the other ones, like, the guys that collect fucking sponsees, and they fucking, they have not all of them, but they have this fucking God complex, and it drives me crazy. Like, to go in, because, you know, you had to go to however many meetings a week and shit. Yeah. So you go to, you know,
the
certain ones.
Sign.
Yeah. And fucking, you got, like, the same dude saying the same shit every week, thinking he's, like, some badass motherfucker. It's like, dude, you're actually pretty fucking lame.
Well, I had the guy, a guy I got close with there at first, I was like, this guy's got it together. He's had years clean. He used to do all this crazy stuff he would talk about. And I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And then I found out he was just, like, fucking hookers all the time. Like, on a weekly basis, he was just spending so much money and then giving money to other girls in the program to fuck it. Like, not hookers.
Right.
Like, girls who had, like, not a lot of time clean. It was paying them for fuck. And I just thought, I was like, man, I thought you're supposed to be my role model, man. Yeah. Is this the goal? Like, to be sober, but I'm fucking hookers?
And then they're like, well, I told you, know, you're not supposed to put me on a pedestal. It's like, motherfucker, you put yourself on a fucking pedestal.
Yeah, man. I was like, hey, man, I don't want you to be a god or be a perfect person, but I don't know, man. The hookers is one thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, the hookers I have no problem with.
I was more cool with, but then I was like, wait, your fucking girl is like who we know.
Yeah.
For money.
Who we know, who are recovering, who may take that cash you're giving them and go get fucking high, you idiot.
Yeah.
And the thing is
they
the truth
did.
Is
some
he
of them did.
Doesn't care.
Yeah, no, he doesn't
give
care
a shit.
Because it's his program.
Right.
But I just, I think it's, you can do it. I think if you try really hard, you can do whatever you put your mind to.
You want
to
know something stupid my cousin did?
Yeah, I would love to.
So his brother died of a heroin overdose in 2016. His younger brother, who just died a few months back of, like, I don't know, I don't know if it was cirrhosis. He basically drank himself to death. But he decided after his brother died of heroin that he was going to do heroin for a year to prove that you could get off of it at any time. So, and this, I'm not making this, this is all true. And I don't want to go into like the super personal shit, because the end of his life was really sad. But like, we didn't have much of a relationship, but he's still my younger cousin. And just all the situations and everything. But my point being, that's how fucking dumb some people are. Like, dude, don't try heroin.
Yeah, it's really, really
plus, you
really
can't even get heroin
stop
anymore.
Yes, that's a good point. The first time I went to rehab, I pissed positive for heroin only. The second time I went, it was heroin and fentanyl. Mm. And the third time I went, it was just fentanyl in my pee. And yeah. So,
and you thought you were probably buying heroin.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was buying heroin for sure. The guy assured me.
Yeah, because drug dealers are such reputable folk.
Yes. Yes, the guy, his name was Star. I don't know what his real name was, but he had a star tattooed on his face. So.
Dude, that's the guy's name who runs the recovery Dharma thing.
Sure, did you find
out? Is he tall and gay?
No, okay. He's tall, not gay. He was a gangbanger. He was a very scary man.
Different type of star.
Yeah.
Not the Jeffree Star, no. More like the gang star.
Yeah, yeah. It was that and teardrops on the other eye. So
that, for real people, that indicates they killed somebody.
Yeah. That's always the scariest part. And then it always felt weird because I'd live in Lakewood and I'd like be like, can you bring it to me? It's late. and they'd be like, I'm not coming to Lakewood.
Sorry.
And so I'd pay a lot of money to get people to bring it to me in Lakewood because I was like, it's late. I don't want to go to jail.
I was gonna call you gay when you said you lived in Lakewood and then you took it. I didn't have to call you gay.
Yeah, yeah, they were always so, so weird about it. And I was like, guys, it's fine. I do it here all the time.
Yeah.
You see all those new rules that they rolled out? Are those federal laws or are those Ohio laws?
For what?
For the weed, like coming back
weed
and forth. Is that
it's
federal?
Ohio.
It's Ohio.
Oh, yeah. It is. So it is literally just about money.
Yeah, it's about money. Yeah, as of Friday, it is illegal to get weed in Michigan and bring it back here.
You know what?
Hypothetically, I went to Michigan yesterday to sightsee, and I had a great time. Fuck you, Mike DeWine.
Yeah, he's a cunt.
He's awful, and probably doesn't help the opioid epidemic at all by making weed harder to get and less affordable. So thanks for that.
Yeah, no, it's all. I mean, it's literally they're like, well, because Michigan has a surplus, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's the cheapest it is in the United States. Mm-hmm. So, of course, when you can drive 2 hours, you'll take the gas money.
Oh,
when you can come back with three times as much weed for as much as you'd pay.
Hypothetically, we got an ounce for free for walking in the door yesterday.
That's awesome.
Hypothetically.
So, yeah, that's...
And here it's what? Like, at the dispensaries, I don't know, like over $200 an ounce, I think, plus 18% tax.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous.
I mean, it is coming down from where it was even a year ago, but this is going to be their last little surge before they have to bring it down further. I think that's the whole reason they're doing it.
Well, now all the THC seltzers are gone too from the bars and gas stations that went illegal as of Friday, which also
no public consumption.
Well, they just, they're not allowed to sell any hemp-derived THC products.
Yeah, what's
now.
With that?
So all the seltzers, all the, like, THCA stuff at the gas stations, that is all totally illegal now. In the bars, I was reading, one of their biggest sellers now is tradition to these, transition to these THC seltzers. So
yeah.
It just goes to alcohol is getting less popular.
So, sheer question, does that fuck up, do these rules fuck up how you get your shit?
Yep.
Okay, that's what, all right, that sucks, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's, it just means I can't, I don't have the time to go to Michigan, so.
Or the balls, because it's illegal.
Well, Jordan, I, how long did I sell drugs?
I'm kidding.
This is, I don't give a
We're
shit.
We're on a joking podcast.
I have no balls to go to Michigan. Really Shut up.
Did you forget your butt plug today?
No, it's right here.
Oh, I thought you were sharing it with Marty.
No, no. Marty and I don't share toys. That would be gross.
Also, are you guys hip to the Florida rehab, like, farm system scam?
I know I was in there with a couple people.
There's brokers. So there are these guys who operate as brokers in between. They're the middleman between the addict and the health insurance and the rehab center. So these brokers will find rich kids in Ohio under 26 who are on their parents' health insurance, who have PPO, really good health
insurance. This all makes sense now.
And they will find them and they'll be like, hey, we'll get you sent to a Florida rehab in Miami and it won't cost you anything,
and we'll give you cigarettes.
Yeah, and we'll give you cigarettes and everything, and they bill their parents' insurance in the tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars. I went to Florida once when I was sober and I was speaking at a lot of meetings, and I went to a meeting in Florida and I found hundreds of kids, like 21, 22, most of them from Ohio, Maine, Vermont and stuff. And they're like, yeah, we smoke weed and stuff. Our parents sent us down here. And the brokers will pay these addicts a kickback.
Yeah.
Often of like $1,000 or $5,000 or 10 if they complete the whole 90 days. And then they'll go spend 10 grand.
I'm relapsing, bro.
And come back. It's a whole scam.
Well, that's the thing too, is they'll need, if they need you to piss hot, they'll get you high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What? So that, like, so it's not just it's not just sex trafficking. People traffic everybody for everything.
Well, the addicts often like it too, because they're like, hey, I stay sober for 60, 90 days. They give me 10 grand and then hopefully they don't die while they're out using and make it back another time.
Yeah.
So it's quite a lucrative scam.
Well, seems. Like another thing that I have like a problem with, I guess this is more like the recovery places. But, like, obviously, AA, like, I've talked about this on the show before. I think that they should be more honest about the actual success rate.
Yeah,
they're not.
Small.
It's 5 to 8%. Mm-hmm. And they will not fucking say, you have to look into that shit.
Yeah, they undersell it. Remember when I was there, they were like, look to your left, look to your right. Only two of the three of you guys is going to make it. And that is so optimistic.
Yeah.
That's just a lie. At this point, I think from when I went 7-8 years ago now, I don't think I know one person who's still totally sober. I know a lot who are dead. I know like 7 or 8 who are dead. And that's always a bummer when you find out.
Yeah, I've lost a few people that way over the years. It sucks. But especially because these were people that I know worked a program.
Mm-hmm.
And
COVID was rough a lot.
There was a guy that he actually used to like bring packs of cigarettes just for the house and shit. I think he had been sober 3 or 4 years. He was doing really well, and like before I got in there, I guess he had like a real bad accident at work and it like fucked up his hand, and like pain, and he, I don't know if they weren't giving him, you know, perks or whatever. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that they weren't, or if he didn't want to take them. But anyway, it turned out he came in one Friday, he did a meeting, he was dead Monday because he and his daughter found him in the bathroom. He couldn't take the pain, went and got fentanyl and dead.
Yeah. Yep. The withdrawals are crazy too. for I mean, even like the alcohol and benzos.
That's what I went through. Yeah. That's what I went through. That sucked.
I've seen seizures from guys in there who didn't get enough Valium and stuff.
Yeah.
Withdrawing, just totally seize and fall. That stuff's nothing to the withdrawing stuff. That really sucks. I showed up at a free rehab once when I was like 19 before I had health insurance. And I showed up there after weeks of calling because my mom was making me because she caught me getting high.
Yeah.
And I had to keep calling every day for a bed. It's in Parma. It's where they send guys from county a lot of the time. It's called, I'll remember, but 90% of the guys there were county.
Okay.
And so I call. I finally get a bed, and they're like, yeah, you can come in. I go in. It's the second day, and I'm like, when do I start getting, like, Suboxone or, like, stuff for detox? And they're like, we don't do detox here.
What?
And I'm like, I'm sorry. They're like, yeah, you're supposed to detox somewhere else before you come here. I was like, no one told me that. So
yeah, that's a bad program.
Yeah, it was bad. I made it to the second night. I think I got there on a Thursday, and it was Saturday night, and I was like, I need a Benadryl and like Imodium because I'm pooping my pants,
right?
Because that's happens. And they're like, we're not allowed to legally give you anything until Monday when there's a doctor here. And this is Saturday night, and I was like, okay. And I walked like 4 miles home. Jesus. And my mom was not, she wasn't thrilled, Jeremy, I'll be real.
Yeah.
I had to check into IOP the next day, which is intensive outpatient.
Yeah.
It's like 4 days a week for 3 hours a day with a bunch of strangers. And that's,
for like 10 weeks.
Yeah, for like 10 weeks. And that stinks.
I graduated early.
I love that they call it graduating.
Well, I haven't talked about this much, but like, I won't go into too many details just because like people listen and shit. But I went in there to get fucking clean, and I did that, and to live clean for a while, and I did that. I also am not a rules person. So I did everything in my power to get around everything I didn't want to do. And I will say, I did a pretty good job at it.
Yeah. Well, the one I was in was Suboxone. It was a Suboxone program.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how... I have a love-hate with Suboxone over the years.
I hate that. I think it's the devil.
Well, I used to think that when I was in NA and stuff, because if somebody came in on Suboxone, we did not consider them clean. You are not clean. You can't talk. You can't share shit. People would cut them off.
Mm-hmm.
And when somebody's nodding out, it's kind of hard to, you know.
Well, even if someone wasn't high at all, they just shared that they were.
Gotcha.
We wouldn't let them talk. And now I look back and I regret that because those people are trying.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe some of them died because they came in and didn't feel welcome and were like, I'm not clean. What's the point? I might as well. But then when I was on it in IOP, I got into it with the doctor because she was like, you are clean. And I'd be like, why? How? This is a drug. She like, but a doctor's giving it to you.
Yeah.
And you're taking it as prescribed. And I'm like, well, what if a doctor gives me a script for marijuana? And she's like, that's different. And I was like, how?
No, it's not.
And she couldn't elaborate. And she got really frustrated and kicked me out of the class. But now I think it is good if you take it as you're supposed to. I think it is a crutch. I think people do abuse it. But I have some friends who have been taking it every day, like from a doctor for years. And they live like full lives and have families and kids now. And you're supposed to get off of it. When the doctors prescribe it, they're like, well, when you off in a couple years.
It's not supposed to be a fucking forever thing.
But they're on it for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And I feel weird about that. But at the same time, I'm like, they have kids who are healthy and kids who have never seen them nodding out and stuff. So,
and plus,
is that bad?
It's better than methadone.
Yeah, it's better than methadone.
If methadone, you're still getting a little bit high, number one. And number two, you don't have to go to the fucking clinic and stand in line,
mm-hmm.
like in the rough part of town,
mm-hmm.
for hours to get your shit.
Yeah.
You can just have it film.
And it is a weird double-sided thing, because on one hand, they will argue they're not getting high, they don't feel anything from it, which is true from my experience, you don't feel anything, but on the other hand, if you don't take it, you go through withdrawals even worse than heroin.
Yeah.
The withdrawal from Suboxone is awful. It's up there with fentanyl.
It's real bad.
The body shakes, the loss of bodily functions.
That was always my least favorite thing to come off of. Mm-hmm. That was like I mean benzos was, it was bad in its own way. It was very, very uncomfortable, but Suboxone just, I don't know. Yeah. It was like, it's like when you come off like an Adderall binge, like all your serotonin's gone, everything. The world is just terrible.
Yeah. And my friends who are on it for years, I asked them like, what are you going to do? And they're like, I don't know if I never get off of it. Mm-hmm. Because how bad is the withdrawal going to be after 7 years, two pills a day, one pill a day?
Mm-hmm. You
know? I'm just grateful. I'm not in the boat because it's not fun. It's not fun at all.
Did you guys ever get hallucinations when you detoxed?
Yeah. No. I remember being in a meeting, like fresh out of rehab detoxing, and the floors were moving like this, and I was like, did I take drugs and forget? Did I relapse or something? And I was like, I can't tell anyone because I'm too new. They'll not believe me that I'm not high.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I've seen some weird stuff. Auditory, too, for sure.
The auditory is my least favorite because that's hard to, like, if I see, like, an imp, like, laughing at me in the window, like, clearly there's something off.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hear like people from far off places calling my name, that's harder to shake off.
Yeah, for sure.
If you hear something, no, you didn't. I follow those Appalachian rules, dude. Fuck that. Don't whistle after night either. Dead serious. Look that shit up, man. It's creepy. You know what a mimic is?
Skinwalkers, dude. Exactly.
Don't say that fucking word after night either. Don't say that outside.
I'm superstitious. I have some weird ones.
I'm a lot of bit stitious.
I go over railroad tracks if I'm driving. I have to lift both feet off the ground, close my eyes, hold my breath, make a wish, touch the ceiling, and touch glass.
That is quite the process.
It is. It used to just be make a wish, but over the years,
make a death wish.
All these other people say that, but it's really quick. If you touch the sunroof, that counts as glass and the ceiling. So it's just a real quick. And you're done. But when you get those like six railroad tracks in a row, that gets pretty messy.
You're gonna break through the glass ceiling.
Yeah, I don't open my eyes. I'm like, if I die, I die. But I won't break that superstition because the wishes come true. And this is, people are gonna flame me and say this is sad. But I wish for things that I know will come true. Like, I wish I have a good day, or I wish I don't get a DUI on the way home. I wish for stuff like that, because then I'm like, it comes true, and then I can gaslight myself into believing this works. You can't disprove it if my wishes come true.
Small victories.
Yes, very, very small. I used to wish for $1 million and stuff, and I was
That's not how it works.
No.
That's not how it works.
No, you just got to wish to not go to jail.
Yeah. It's a good wish to have right now.
Yeah. Be nice to people. Be kind.
Jail sucks.
Jail.
I hate jail. And I've only ever been to the best one, which is North Royalton City Jail. It is the best one because at least when I was in there in 2015, you can smoke cigarettes in there.
That's pretty great.
It was sick. They gave, someone has to bring you a full pack, and it can't be opened, and they let you out twice a day, and they give you 4 cigarettes at a time, and they light it once. So you have to... you got to butt fuck them, as they told me in jail, they called it. Where you use the one that's going out to light the beginning of the next one.
I also called that butt fucking.
Yeah, and it sucked because I was in a pod with 4 dudes, and I was the only one that had cigarettes. So
never want to be that guy.
Yeah, I was getting
that's
hassled.
One thing. That was one thing in rehab though that I got very comfortable fucking real quick saying no.
Yep. Nope.
No
cigarettes. No way. I got a mom that loves me still, dude. I'm not sharing shit.
Well, no, my like a bit. One of my biggest problems is like when I didn't have money in there. You know, they provided tobacco. It was shitty, but like, hey, it's there. And, like, I would, you know, I'd roll myself a ton of them. Mm-hmm. And then, like, people would try to bum them. I'd be like, no, you, like, alert. I don't know how to roll. Well, we do have YouTube, So go watch a fucking video.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we like where we were at was. I mean, it was. I
went to one of the nicest ones. I went to Johnny Manziel. Went there, Glen Bay.
I've heard of Glen Bay.
Glen Bay is the bomb. I often think I was like, if I relapse, it wouldn't be that bad because I could go there. And in the summer, they had like volleyball courts. We fished. I lived in like a mansion with a bunch of other people that had good jobs. They keep you separated from the real junkies there, which is like it's awesome. They keep them in like,
the real the hospital. Junkies.
Yeah, the gross ones. They keep them in the hospital, and if you made like $40,000 a year, which is not even that much, you got to live in like a separate house for people with corporate jobs. And I was like, this is awesome, dude. I'm here with like alcoholics. Which were the best.
You're so fancy. First is like, ooh, I have a sunroof now. I get to live in the big house.
Yeah, it was cool, man. Except, shout out Glen Bay, honestly, because I'd be dead if it wasn't for them. The one time I went, I checked myself in, the time that it stuck for 2 years. They made me check myself in, and I drove myself. I was adamant about driving myself. For freedom, but I needed to stop and get more crack on the way there. And I made it there, and I got there, and I was late, and they didn't want to let me in because I had an open staph infection.
Ooh.
In my arm. And they're like, there are high-risk people here. This is like technically a hospital. You can't come in. And I was like, listen, if you guys don't let me stay, I'll probably die. And I was being for real, and they let me stay. They put me in like a quarantine room for 3 days. No one was allowed to come by me or anything. I was solo, and then they dressed it, and it got better, and I stayed. And hypnosis is what did it. I got hypnotized, and that's what saved my life.
No shit.
Yeah, it was a. You didn't have to go. It was like you could either go do that or do like art therapy or some shit. And I was like, whatever. I don't think I can be hypnotized. But I was like, maybe if I try and open my mind to it and like be open to the experience, something will happen.
That's a big part of all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just open-mindedness. Yeah. And I tried it. And it was this very cool woman. And she took us through this hypnotherapy where the short of it is that we met a spirit guide of sorts who could be someone we knew or didn't know. And it was like my best friend Rachel, who died from heroin. And I saw her, and it ended with we came upon a hot air balloon in a field, and it was tied down to the ground by these three ropes. And she instructed us to put like three things that we wanted to get rid of from ourselves into this basket. And I put like my love for heroin. I was with a really toxic girlfriend for like 2 years at the time, so I put her ass in the basket. Just like metaphorically chucked her in there.
Yeah.
And something else, I think my love for food, but that one didn't take. And then she had us like cut
two out of three ain't bad.
Two out of three ain't bad. She had us cut the ropes to the air balloon, and when the air balloon left, I woke up and I just totally felt better. I called my girlfriend at the time. I was like, I never want to talk to you or see you again. And that was it. She did suck my dick one time when I got home from rehab, but that was it. There was just that one time.
Everybody needs a welcome home present.
I needed it. I needed it. I'll be real. Absolutely. I needed it, and she caved pretty easy. But she's been sober this whole time since then. She's been sober for like 8 years.
Sucking your dick got her sober.
Yeah, I think so.
She sucked the soberness out of you.
I ruined her life real bad. She ruined my life back, so we kind of ruined it.
Yeah, no, I have one of those too, man.
You know, and good, all power to her. She seems sober and
not who everybody
happy.
Thinks it is.
Yeah, man, the hypnosis, it just really worked, and it worked for like a couple of years until what happened, how I relapsed, was that I cheated on my girlfriend at the time with my ex-girlfriend, because my girlfriend didn't suck my dick ever, and I should have broke up with her. Instead, I stayed with her for 5 years, and other people sucked my dick. You know, I'm a better person now. But anyway, I felt bad that I cheated on her, so I drank. And that's how I relapsed after 2 years. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, I didn't instantly start doing heroin and stuff. And I was like, they lied. They lied to me. They're fucking liars. Because in AA, they would tell me, like, if you pick up, you will pick up right where you left off. And so when I instantly didn't start wanting heroin, I was like, I've been bamboozled. I can't believe this.
Flim flam.
Yeah, and then I started smoking weed and stuff, and I was like, still not doing stuff. And then I did start doing stuff again. I was like, oh, man, they were right. They were just wrong about the time.
Right.
They were right. Because I didn't change anything else. I went back to being like the same person, and then for me personally, it's a cycle of I got high, and then I would feel guilty about getting high, so I got high again, then I would do something that made me feel guilty, like cheat or lie or steal, and then I'd get high so I didn't feel guilty, and it's was just a cycle that shame and covering it up, and shame and covering it up, and then that goes on until I was like, listen, man, you did that stuff, but you can move on.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like it's moving on. Like, look, there's nothing I can do to change what I've previously done. If I continue to repeat that same behavior, then yeah, fuck me, I'm an asshole. No. But like, I can keep trying to be better. You know what I mean?
It's a pity party.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And like, I, what really irritates me. Is and this not even just 12-step programs. I mean, you know, family members, friends, whatever. People who try to make your sobriety their issue. Like, yo, it's not your fucking business how I handle this. Mm-hmm. If I get out of hand, yeah, fucking say something. But do you see it? No, I'm very clear-headed. Leave me the fuck alone. Mm-hmm. That
and
shit bothers me.
And that's a hard line because you do, like, as a person, understand sometimes where they're coming
from. Oh, 100%.
That would frustrate the fuck out of me.
Well, don't ask me how many days you've been sober. Mind your own fucking business. How about that?
My mom would love to. How many days is it today? How many days? And it was nice when I could tell her honestly how many days.
Right.
And, you know, she knew. Moms are smart. Moms are so smart. Because she knew. My mom always knows. Like, when I'm bullshitting her, as good of a liar as I think I am, they always know eventually, you know? And that's the best part about being happy and healthy now is I think it's just my mom's happy now. And that's like the best, man. It sucked seeing your mom sad.
It honestly made a huge difference in everything for me, like being able to be around my family and not like there was one time I went over there like 5 days on meth and I'm gonna move stuff with my buddy. Our faces are completely covered in red spider webs, so it's like it was all bad. But you know, now that I have enough time in, it's I don't have that issue with them like worrying about shit.
Yeah,
right.
Cause I know my mom used to just worry if I was like dead. Like, if I'd call her, or if she'd find me in my bedroom dead or something like that, which is scary because I've seen other people overdose and stuff in front of me and that stuff.
I give my mother credit for getting me in there.
Yeah,
like I will give her credit for...
Shout out all the moms.
Fucking being the one who was like... gave me... the ultimatum of like, yo, you, if like to her, this her stipulation was you can come back home for a little bit afterwards if you go to rehab. And I've said this before, I tried every fucking avenue. I called everybody in every fucking state I knew trying to not go. And then I finally, with like 2 weeks left, I just accepted it and just was like, all right, guess you're going to rehab. And like, just made my preparations to do that, move out of where I was. And My mom was the crux of that entire fucking thing. We still don't see eye to eye on anything.
I still drink too much on her.
I still don't drink, but that's a whole other conversation. But no, just like I give my mom mad credit for just being like, no, you like if you don't realize you need this. Then you're just going to go be on your own and you can live homeless and figure out what the fuck you're going to do.
Yeah.
And I got to give her credit for that.
Yeah, that was about the sentiment from mine. She had found that it was the day actually that my girlfriend at the time overdosed in front of me. My mom found that I had stolen like $500 or something from her bedroom over the course of like 6 months. And she didn't even know what the hell was going on at the hospital. But she was like, yeah, dude, you're... rehab or out of my house. Have fun living in your Buick Century. which I was at the for 5 minutes seemed like a good idea. Mm-hmm. And then I tried to, I was like, try to figure every way out of it. And then I went, and I'm really glad that I went, man, because I don't believe in all the stuff that they teach you there, but I think there is a lot of stuff that you can pick and choose.
And that's those are the people that I didn't mean to cut you off, people that you learn to trust in rehab, mm-hmm. are the ones who straight up come to you, the ones you know are fucking real, mm-hmm. and they're like, look, take what works for you, mm-hmm. and leave the rest. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not those by the book, yeah. and I get it. You have like those, you know. I was an atheist for a long time. I was an agnostic for a long time after that, and like I. You see all these different types of AA meetings where they're trying to appeal to different people, and I get that, and I like that, but like the core sentiment of some of it, mm-hmm. you know, I've read it. I think Bill W. and fucking what's his name, I think they're really both full of their own shit too. Yeah,
they cheated on their wives and did LSD all the time and cheated on their wives after getting sober. So I think there's a lot wrong with them, but like you were saying, the non-traditional ones, there's a shout out if you think you want a meeting, but don't this isn't promotion, but there's a meeting that for non-traditional believers, for spiritual non-traditional people at the Lakewood Library.
I've heard about that. Is that Monday?
It's either Monday or Wednesday.
Yeah, I've heard
online,
about that one.
But I went a few times and it was a very different vibe. I went to the first meeting I went to ever was an AA meeting, and I went in there and I shared that I was an addict, not an alcoholic. I was like, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't even like alcohol that much at this point in my life.
Oh, and that drives them fucking nuts.
An old man like freaked out on me for saying I was an addict. He cut me off before I could finish. He's like, this is a meeting for alcoholics.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out of here. And it really, I was like, fuck that. I'll go get high then. I'm like,
yeah, no, that, like, yeah, no,
shit.
Those.
Nah, fuck those people.
I never talked in meetings like when I went. Like, I just, like, I occasionally here and there, just because, like, yo, I know my fucking audience, bro. This is not it.
Yeah.
And, but, like, that's the one thing I did love is, like, because, you know, I had to go to meetings every day. And so I'd fucking sit there and I'd just pick ones that, like, I when certain people would walk in, I'd be like, hell yeah, this is going to be great.
I love the old timers with the sayings.
Oh,
the sayings. There's a guy. I'm not dropping any names.
Right.
Anonymity. But there's a guy who would say, he was an older guy, and he would say the craziest stuff all the time, and it would piss. Everyone likes it at first, but then after you're there,
it
for
gets
a while,
old.
You want to hit this man. He'd say like, you know what they say? You don't. If you don't get in position, you don't get fucked. Meaning that you put like
you get raped.
You don't get in position, you don't get fucked. And he would call any restaurant that serves alcohol a dope house. So Applebee's is a dope house. If we went out to eat to an Applebee's after, he's like, y'all are going to the dope house. If you sit in the barbershop long enough, you're gonna get a haircut.
All right, so I got two that just reminded me. So I'll tell, because I won't forget the one. But this was actually in like our like house like group. They called it didactic. We had to do it for 2 hours every day where we just shared our bullshit with each other. Mm-hmm. It was just excuse for programming for them to charge insurance. Yeah. That's the whole other thing, is the scam of it all. Mm-hmm. But this guy would come in every once a week, maybe once every other week. And he's like, everybody knows his name and he's a no bullshit guy and blah, blah, blah. He calls, you know, he's a fucking asshole is what he is. Mm-hmm. Dude. There was a guy at Stella who I think is still there, who I love him very, very much. He has aphasia, so he can't speak, and he was artillery in the military. He's very, very awesome dude. Mm-hmm. He made him stand up one day, and he goes, come here. He goes, I'm the dope man. And he goes, and then he asked him, he goes, so you're going to stay sober the rest of your life? And homeboy, you know, shakes his head, yeah. And he goes, no, you're not, because I'm the dope man, and you got up and you came and talked to me. And it's like, you are fucking picking on a handicapped person out of all these mother. Like, we were praying, one of us was like, oh, please pick me, dude. Like, that wasn't fun. That pissed me off. But, yeah. Like, the one in the meeting, there's a guy who, if you ever go to a meeting at Stella, he has a fucking a truck with lightning bolts on it. I'll just say that.
Oh,
about.
So this guy always said the wildest shit.
Is he an older guy?
Yeah. And he was like,
he was telling a story,
like sharing at a meeting, like a lunchtime meeting, dude. So like a fucking half hour meeting he's sharing, and he goes, he's telling his story, and he goes, and that's how you end up butt naked with your asshole blown out. We were all like, everybody kind of like stopped and looked like, did we all just fucking hear what we just think we heard? People just say the craziest shit in there, man.
I like, I'd have one guy in rehab, he would yell, he was like a bodybuilder type dude, and he would get so hype when he was talking so loud. He'd be like, while you guys are sitting here, your disease is doing push-ups in the parking lot. which I took as a metaphor for, well, if you're not working on your recovery, your disease is working against you getting stronger. But I always thought that was funny. Just, I imagined like a hair, crack pipe doing push-ups in a parking lot.
Syringes going up and down.
the first time I went to rehab, I did not know how to smoke crack right. I didn't know where to buy a crack pipe. I didn't know about Chore Boy, which is like the metal cleaning, the copper cleaning pad that bristles that you stick inside of a glass stem to smoke crack. But I didn't know that.
We don't condone any of that, by the way.
You can't go to any gas station in Akron and get a Chore Boy, a glass rose.
All right. Yeah. Are you guys fucking CIA? Jesus. Yeah.
We can cut that. Or I'll say different words. So anyway, I didn't know how to do it. So what I was doing was freebasing it, as you would off anything else, just off regular tinfoil. And so when I drove my car there, the guy who worked there who had to come and clean out my car to make sure I didn't have any contraband, he's finding all these pieces of foil. And he's like, I thought you said you snorted your drug of choice. And I was like, I do. He's like, then what's this? And I was like, for rock. And he stood there and he just looked at me and he got this angry look on his face. And I was like, what? And he's like, do you know how much crack you wasted? He was like genuinely so mad. He'd been sober 10 years. And he was just so mad that I had wasted all this. And I was like, no. And so
no.
The next time I came back, I had a lot of Chore Boy and glass stems in my car. And he cleaned my car. I was like, I took your advice and made sure I learned how to do it.
Dude, there was so, like, the thing was, is like, you know, like, pills were my thing, you know, pills and booze.
At first, mine too, yeah.
Pills and booze was always my thing. I had a couple stretches with coke, and I was never an uppers guy, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it just never was. And it was just so funny, like, you know, like, and don't get me wrong, I was in bad shape. I've seen the pictures of me before I went into rehab. I could have died. I was mixing benzos, booze, and painkillers all the time. I could have died at any point. So I know I'm doing much better now. But, like, dude, I learned. I mean, they say don't compare yourself to people. But I learned so quickly. I was like, I am not nearly as bad as most of these motherfuckers. I don't know what the shit they're talking about is. He robbed a bank and got away with it.
Like, you know? I always felt weird when, like, in our group sessions, I remember we had a kid there who was there because he, like, got caught by his parents drinking, like, twice with his friends. And he would, like, tell us everything. And we'd be like, we don't think you should be here, man. Like, you smoked weed twice ever and drank like three times and got caught. He's like 17. And he would share that with us. And finally, the counselor's trying to do her job. She's like, no, if you're here, you're here for a reason. And after like weeks of sharing with this counselor, she's like, yeah, I don't think you should be here. And that was so weird.
There was a kid who he came. I was already maybe halfway through the program when he came in. And, so the way it worked was you did like, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks in, what's before IOP?
The detox?
No, there's detox for a week. And then there's like the 3 week program, where people come from home too, but it's, I forget. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So you would do that for like 3 weeks and then you go into IOP. And then after that, I think it's 4 or 6 weeks of aftercare, like twice a week. Like this kid, like I found out, I left in October, and I come back and visit like a month later, and I see him in there, but he's in detox, and I was like, what happened there? And they were like, yeah, he got into aftercare, and we all made fun of the dude who did aftercare because it's the same guy. And we had a group chat about him and everything. But the kid, he was like, all right, guys, well, I'm not going to be here this day. So, you know, I guess if you were going to relapse, this is the week to do it. Well, that kid, that was his first aftercare, and that's what he went out and did.
That's... people using in rehab, I always thought was crazy.
Oh.
We had a whole house.
Why would you waste it? Why waste it?
Well, they're so at Glen Bay, they're out. There are buildings that are not attached to the hospital where you move after, like, you're in there for 2 weeks. So they're all over the main campus. And there's one that's, like, in the front of the hospital, closer to the road than the actual main building is. And it's all girls in that house. And someone in that house had a guy come and bring them meth to one of their windows. And so the one of the RAs walks over there, and literally seven of these girls are smoking meth together in this room.
That's,
and they kicked them all out.
The girls, there was a guy right before I got there. I guess there was like a group of like seven dudes who were all smoking crack. Like, I don't think it was like they all got caught at the same time, but like they were all whatever. But like once I got in there, the girls were at the convent. Like, there wasn't that many of them, but, like, any time one of them would get discharged, it wouldn't just be one of them. It'd be, like, two or three of them. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's weird.
There was a guy, I remember, they had a graduation, like, if you were leaving and you were there the full time, you got to speak at a like meeting sort of, but it wasn't an official meeting. It was just like sort of a graduation thing where they let you tell your story or whatever. They let this guy go up, and he's not talking about recovery at all. He's bragging about all the stuff he got into while he was drinking, like waking up on a roof of a hotel in Mexico and all this stuff.
I hate that shit.
Yeah, and it goes on forever and ends with something mildly inspiring, right? And then 10 minutes later, everyone's like thanking him. 10 minutes after that, I see him crying, sitting down. It's like, what's wrong? He's like, I got fucking high. They found my Suboxone in my socks. And I was like, you just did this whole thing, Jesus Christ, man. I don't get it.
My best takeaway in rehab was I heard this guy give a great lead, and he said, and I'm sure he got this from somewhere else. I don't know the original quote, but like it was, hell is for religious people. I'll have to think about it for 2 seconds because it was such a good quote.
One and a good share was pain is inevitable but misery, or pain is inevitable but misery is optional.
Oh,
something like that.
Hell is for people, or religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell. Spirituality is for people who have been there and come back.
Oh,
and I was like, nice. That was like, that hit me like a fucking ton of bricks. I was like, oh shit,
yeah,
that's legit.
The best advice I ever got in a meeting was don't smoke crack with Anthony Soul.
Sort of like what they told me at the very beginning. They're like, just come to me.
Was this before or after he got caught?
Oh, this was.
Is that the guy who stole the mixtapes or whatever?
No. Anthony Soul was the Imperial Avenue killer.
Oh, okay.
The one that buried women
in the walls and shit.
The one that covered up for years because they blamed the smell on the sausage factory nearby. Yeah,
that's.
I met a woman in AA that smoked crack with him, and then she found out what he was about and was like, "Oh no!" and got clean.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy what happens to people who get high and how close it is to happening to you.
Yeah.
Sometimes, like, I had a friend I met in rehab. He's in prison still. His name's Scott. And one day I'm sitting at a meeting and my mom texts me and she's like, I'm so glad you're sober. This could have been you. She saw a news story. This happened several years ago, but my friend Scott, he was in rehab and he was home on a weekend pass from rehab. Mm-hmm. And he met another friend of mine that we met in rehab and they relapsed together. They got high and he OD'd behind the wheel while he was driving downtown with his foot on the gas. And went through a light and killed a young woman celebrating her 21st birthday on a scooter. She was doing a scavenger hunt with her family. And the other guy in the car who died like a year ago from heroin ran away, left my friend Scott there in the car by himself. And my friend Scott he's in prison. He got the mandatory 8 years and his license is suspended for life, which I didn't even know they could do that. So crazy. When I was younger, something very similar almost happened to me behind the wheel of a car. I thankfully didn't hurt anybody. No one was hurt and no one crashed or anything like that. But it's just, it's very scary. And I think that it's hard to not be spiritual in some sense, to see that I've never hurt anybody and I'm alive and stuff. So I'm some sort of spiritual, I would say.
Only person I've ever physically hurt is myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is that I've done a lot of emotional damage for sure, but like physically only ever hurt myself.
Yeah. I hurt myself on purpose once to get, I needed money for drugs really bad and I didn't have the balls to just straight up steal from this guy. So I hit up a guy I knew who liked pills and I was like, yeah, do you need some? I can get them for really cheap. And so I picked him up and was like, yeah, dude, I'll be right back. And I went into this apartment building that I knew the front door was unlocked. And I went in the basement and I headbutted the wall a bunch of times and I punched myself in the face till my nose bled. And then I limped back to my car and I told this guy I got jumped by like three dudes and they stole his money. And he felt really bad and gave me $20 because he felt so bad. And then I took all his money and I went and bought drugs. And yeah, sorry, Brandon. I never paid you back for that like 12 years ago, but I am sorry.
You fight clubbed yourself.
I did it. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, I did. And he felt so bad about it. I limped really good. I limped like I looked pigeon footed.
Man, this nice man's just trying to get fucking pills, you know?
I think to this day he just really thinks that like he had a part in me getting beat up and he feels bad about it probably. I tried to find him on Facebook, but he blocked me. And I was going to apologize and give him money, but, you know, he's probably better off, I hope.
Let's hope.
Let's hope so. But, yeah, I think all in all, man, if you want it bad enough, if you find a reason, you guys...
you will get the drugs.
Yeah, if you want it. Yeah, you can do whatever you put your mind to.
Yeah. It's... the main problem I have with 12-step programs is the predatory nature of it. You brought it up earlier.
Yeah.
With the sponsor paying girls to fuck them, but that is a common practice.
13th step is
that. I was going to say, what's the term for it?
13th step in.
It's bullshit, and I hate it. And the fact that you are forced to go for a wide variety. Like, I sold weed, and I had to go to AA.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no reason for me to be in there, but the shit that I saw that happened at these meetings just pissed me off.
Yeah, a lot of young women taken advantage by older dudes with time, and old lesbians too.
Oh yeah,
I've seen them be just as bad as some of the dudes, man.
Yeah, predation is not necessarily only reserved for the masculine persuasion.
Definitely.
But you know. If the take what you leave, take what you can and leave the rest behind thing is true.
Yeah. But I think of it like the Rat City experiment. If you've heard of that.
Yeah.
You guys. It's they took a bunch of rats and they gave it a bunch of cocaine.
Oh, yeah.
And the rats are loving it. They love cocaine. They're having so much fun on cocaine. But then they give it cocaine, but then they also give it like a jungle gym, like tubes to run through and balls to play with and like cheese and female rats to bang and like a bunch of other stuff. And once they have that, they like stop touching the cocaine altogether. And I always think about that because it makes me think about AA. And like for me, that's what it boils down to, the opposite of being in active addiction is not complete abstinence. It's living a meaningful life. And that's like what comedy, my girlfriend, school, my hot Pokemon cards and Legos I'm into. Like, so I just am really fulfilled in my life, and I don't have free time. And like, someone actually texted me on Snapchat like 3 or 4 weeks ago that I still have Snapchat just for like pictures of my cats that pop up, you know. And this guy offered me pills, and for the first time in my whole life, I didn't even think about it. Like, I didn't even consider, like, oh, my girlfriend wouldn't notice if I just, like, hid in my bedroom. Like, none of that scheming, manipulative behavior that used to cross my mind popped up. The thought of that made me, like, sick. Because I'm like, I don't want to die. I don't want to risk dying. My life is awesome. I have friends. I'm fulfilled. Like, so I really think just living a fulfilling life with hobbies and friends and stuff like that is what was able to help me stay off hard drugs.
I have too many tells, like, if I were to like do like opiates and shit again, because the amount I have to take. I mean, I just like, I used to be able to mask it. Well, I can't now, like, by any means.
My girlfriend would know within half a second.
The weird thing though is, like, for years when I was like, oh no, I'm only doing it every once in a while I was doing it all the fucking time. Like, what? I was like,
the delusion, like, of it.
I look back on it, I was like, all right. Then I was like, if I thought I was getting away with it and everybody knew, that just makes me a fucking idiot.
Yeah. I had a friend who I did tattoos, and she still does. She's very talented. And I went to go get a tattoo when I was using, and I did like a bunch of drugs. I did like a bunch of perks, and I thought I was fine. I didn't think I was looked high or anything. And after that tattoo, she didn't talk to me for 3 years. And finally, I got her to reply to me after like 3 years of being like, what did I do? And she was like, dude, you were so high. You embarrassed me. And I told everyone at my job, my friend was coming, and my good friend. And you were so high in front of all my coworkers, and you embarrassed me so badly. And I felt so awful. And I think about like how many other times did I think I was fine.
Right.
And, you know, and thankfully she forgave me and we're friends now. But it just, that was a real wake up call.
Yeah.
That I was so naive. I didn't even think it could be that. I was like, I know I wasn't that high. Like, what did I say something, you know? And, it seems like there's a lot of resources now. I found a group on Instagram, and they practice on Detroit Road, I think, one of their meetings, but they're an alternative, they're like a harm reduction approach to recovery. I'll try and post it on my story soon, because I think it's good. It's not like 12 steps, but it's just people who think they want to cut back or stop using, and it's community-based, and they do like homeless stuff. And I'll get that posted. Those guys seem like they're doing some good stuff.
Well, yeah, like, and that just brought one more thing I fucking hate about like AA 12-step programs is like they try to pretend like things are gray. Mm-hmm. When everything they talk about is black and white.
Yeah, it's one way or the other.
Yeah.
You're sober, you're not.
Yeah.
And that's all there
is. You're a dry drunk, you're not sober. Like, fuck off, man. Blow me.
Well, if this here dry drunk offers his services to sign your sheets with the fake meeting whenever you need.
I used to sign my drug dealer sheets for him because they knew his girlfriend's signature.
She used to write sponsor comments on my fucking sheets. Just like, I'm like, dude, if this motherfucker reads this shit, I'm cooked. Mm. Like, fucking, and obviously he didn't. Like, what was the what? He was like, make sure he shaves his ass. Like, fucking, so I wish I had all those. That would have been fun to keep all those.
Yeah, I was very cheeky with my sponsor comments.
Butt cheeky.
Mm-hmm. all right.
Did you just call me a Jew?
No. No, I just all of a sudden the normie of everything hit me. That's all. Justin, where can we find you on the internet?
Justin B. Joking, like B-E joking, because I do be joking.
That's a good handle. I like that.
Yeah. I wish my last name started with a B instead of a P. It'd be funnier, but I think if I put Justin P. Joking, people would spell P the word, and they wouldn't find me.
No. They would not.
And then people would call me Piss Boy and stuff, and I wouldn't like that very much.
I have a whole other rehab story about Piss Boy, but that's another time.
So, Jordan, I don't think we're going to find anybody that hates 12-step programs as much as Justin Palko.
No, there is another.
And scene. The world dies again. I'm a rapid avenger. You can see right through my skin. I don't care about making mistakes. I keep saying no.
This has been a Lousy Weather Media Network production. Find new episodes and archives at lousyweathermedia.com.